The most important question I ever got was, what is your legacy? Not the material legacy, but if life stops here, how do you want to be remembered? What is that energy? How do people see you? Complaining? Uplifting? What is your frequency legacy? This podcast series is a result of that question. What is my legacy? A phoenix is burning itself on a funeral pyre, rising from the ashes with a renewed youth to live through another cycle. This fertile ash is filled with phoenix frequencies like compassion, love, forgiveness, intuition, wisdom, generosity, resilience and creativity, and evolution and involution. I've been in the ashes. I want to give voice to the phoenix frequencies. On a weekly basis, I share my resources or interview another phoenix. I'm Nienke van Bezooyen, and I welcome you if this resonates with you. And I invite you to the courage to rise. Welcome to the Phoenix Frequencies, and I'm delighted to announce my first guest on this podcast series, Erin Robinson from the United States. And from the moment I heard her story, I knew she's a phoenix too. This podcast will be a result of a wonderful conversation we had together. Be inspired by Erin. Welcome. How was your life before shifts happened in your life? What were your frequencies then? What did you do? What did your life look like in the past?
So looking back at that, I think that, you know, I likened what my life was before. I've always been a really playful human. I'm playful and explorative, and have always had a level of curiosity. And it's interesting how different that curiosity is now. I spent a lot of time trying to please others and in self-abandonment, martyrdom, victimhood, and really trying to raise myself. Taking care of my father when I was 9. He was a severe alcoholic. I became a parent at 9. And so there was a lot to unpack with that. And I didn't have the resources and the tools to productively and effectively work through that. I would say that that's the way that I lived. I thought I was fine. You know, I was playful and I'd figured it out and I was strong and I could hold my own. And the awareness that I have now is 180 degrees different.
So, and you don't know what you don't know at that time. How could you know how to live a mature, joyous, curiosity life at the age of 9 if you have to act like a grown up? That's a contradiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
And your work life, how did that look like?
I've always had a really strong work ethic. And I, thingly enough, I was working in corporate. I was director of marketing operations. And I led from the heart in corporate. And it was the C-suite used to challenge them in ways that they were not accustomed to. Really closely with the C-suite and process development and my team growth development and my leadership, I spent a lot of time with the executives working on helping them understand that if you're going to have a quality product, you've got to be good to the people and you've got to understand where they're coming from and understand what they need and how to make them successful. I built process for the company. My goal in building process was to make sure that people were happy, like they could go home at the end of a day and feel successful. That was the driving force. I realized now I was overcommitted to it because I was running from things I didn't want to look at.
You worked hard, but what happened? Created a shift.
The company went bankrupt and I was laid off. Chad had had cancer for 6 years prior to that. He was sick for 4 years before I got laid off. And we were actively working to keep him in remission. But his cancer was a blood cancer, so we knew that it would inevitably come back. So just working on keeping him well. And then when I lost my job, the level of stress increased. And so losing my job, then trying to figure out where my value truly was, you know, who was I without being the director of operations? And I knew that I was a caregiver. Interestingly enough, the day that we found out that he was in remission, we found out that he was in remission on the 6th floor of a hospital, and 2 floors down, my dad was in the hospital. And we went downstairs after that to tell the family that was there. All of the family left except for my brother and I, and my dad passed away that day. So that was the beginning of the shift, I would say, probably, but I didn't realize it. I had no idea. And we kind of hobbled along. I was working out in California while he stayed here in Colorado. Right.
Colorado. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was doing some consulting work out in California for 10 months. And then I came back because his cancer came back and I needed to be here to care for him. Got another job that I didn't have to be as invested in, and I could be more focused on him. In 2017, we also brought the horses down from Montana. So I no longer was just focused on work and cancer, but I had a release with the horses. I had space to find peace and harmony, I think. Started working on the house that we lived in. The horses have always been here. When we brought them down, we boarded them here. And then the couple who owned the house decided that they were going to sell. And so we were able to make some magic and purchase it.
Isn't it wonderful just mm-hmm. to create some magic? And when you are in such a pressuring time.
I have to give credit, Mom, that my mom manifested it. She did lots of work while she was up here, been asking for this place to be ours. And it happened.
And you were able to receive it.
Yes, yes, 100%. Yes. And I was even thinking about this the other day. It's so that my frequency now is gratitude. And he named it Grateful Farm.
Ah.
So it's really, really interesting how that has come full circle.
Wonderful. Isn't it great that you have the capacity to see that things are coming to full circle? Because we can be blinded as well, and we can be stuck in the past, so we can't see the full circle.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have this frequency to open the eyes, the ears, and the heart.
Mm-hmm. There is so much to be said for going to the darkest place you've ever been.
Tell me more.
There is, in all of my life experience, and I've had some tricky ones, my life has been dynamic, but this by far was the hardest thing that I had ever experienced. After he passed, his parents actually accused me of killing him. Hurt people, you know, that's what happened, right? And I adopted that. Like I was responsible for his loneliness. And when he, you know, it took me at least a year to let go of the vision of finding him and trying to save him and not knowing what to do and the guilt of him being alone when he died. And I don't want to say that I dramatized his loneliness, but he lived in a constant state of fear, and he wouldn't open the windows. He wouldn't open the curtains. It was very dark. It was full of...
It was heavy.
Yeah, it was super... I mean, there were times that I referred to our home as a coffin. There just wasn't any light. We didn't have any. And we were dedicated to each other and trying to care for one another, but we weren't doing anything to care for ourselves, nothing. And I had had a psychotic break in July of 2018. The doctor called it a psychotic break. It was... They gave me an immediate... like, here, prescriptions, here, take these meds, right? And at the time I was like, okay, give it to me, help me, I need help. And a month after that is when I really got really, really clear something was going to happen. That was in August and he died in December. And after he died, spent a year and change legal mediation with his parents. Everything was settled a month before the pandemic. So at the end of January 2020, I spent February really, like, the level of rage inside of me and anger was toxic. It was cancerous. It was angry, angry, angry. And then in March, the pandemic hit and I was introduced to HeartMath by a group of people that were practicing, had started some HeartMath meditations online to help people through the first couple of weeks of the pandemic. One of my girlfriends said, I really think that you should do this. I really think that it could be good for you. I went into it angry, was like, I'll try it, but it's not going to work. I mean, I was not interested. I was mad at myself. I was in guilt and shame, anger. And I had decided that that's just where I was going to live. I'd made that decision. And with the practice of HeartMath, we went to this meditation every day. And I realized that where I could activate a renewing feeling, I could feel his energy. I started to be able to feel his energy for the first time since he died. And it was as if he was cradling me. Like, I could finally feel how he was holding me.
You got in touch with him again from your heart. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to reach each other from rage than it is from just... being in touch and open. And how did the horses support you?
So the horse has been somewhat socialized, but River, the one who is he's my heart horse, he's my We are so connected. They hadn't been really trained. The horses responded to me. They were always responsive to me and always wanted to like hold space for me. But nothing really opened up until I started getting into my heart. I was dangerous,
yeah.
Right? Like it wasn't.
The frequency you send is really like either a predator or anything what alarms them.
And they opened me up and the awareness that, I mean, you always have to be present with a horse because you never know what they're going to do. You know, you can trust them to a certain extent, but if they spook or something happens, then you just have to be present and aware. And I started to get into my heart. And when I started, I was able to receive them for the healers that they are. That is when we really, like my awareness and my intuition, evolution, my growth, so many things started. And they walked right alongside me.
What I hear is you shifted also your frequency and from the anger and the guilt and all the really depleting energies into an openness, and you come to exchange with the horses. But how could you have known up front how you can show up, not from the martyrhood, but from a mature being in exchange, willing to be in exchange with them? You have to see, as you said, a dark place to rise from the ashes.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes time and the willingness to look in a different way. And in all you share, I can feel this shift of, wow. And then you got back to your curiosity, but on a total new level.
Yes, and coming from that darkness and the place of survival, and then coming into my heart. In one of your previous episodes, you talked about responsibility, and it has become one of the things that I am like the most grateful for is my shedding of codependency, the shedding and the realization that I've become my own hero and I didn't even know I was capable. So
you don't know what you don't know yet. How does your life look like now? Because you're not a C-suite manager any longer, isn't it?
No. Now I live in a place of creation and such deep gratitude. And I'm gritty. I've got a lot of grit and courage. So I live from those places. I'm constantly looking at new ways to create and to bring this wellness and this experience to the world. You know, stepping into that responsibility I have learned and am standing in, it is our most important job to heal ourselves and to be empowered in our own wellness so that we can vibrate that out and share it with the world. It is not our job to fix somebody else. It is not our job to make them well. It is not our job to take on anybody else's stuff. We can send them love, but we can only do that from a healed place. And so I am spending my days now with my horses and my animals creating space for that, creating workshops and holding space for clients who need someone to help them discover their wellness and their power and become their own hero. So I do that with my horses.
Yeah, that's what you do. And what I also notice, it's very impolite to walk someone else's footsteps in growth. It's not our job. It's very impolite to take everything away and take away their opportunity for growth if they can become their own healers.
100%. It is counter to what you would have thought. Like people think that you're supposed to help others. And of course, you know, like you help others. If people need help in certain situations, you help them. The evolution has to be their own. My brother will still say this. He's like, I called you every single day. And he did. I had so many people holding me in such loving arms and they helped me. I knew that I knew I had safe places to go, and nobody could have done what I did for myself.
I think there's a difference in giving a helping hand and can be even strangling fixing, because just support and help can be very practical, emotional, physical, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the real healing and the real stepping up is not to help, it's trying to fix. And that's
right.
The only one who can really do the evolution, involution in healing is you.
Right.
And for everyone in this world, no one can be rescued or fixed at all.
Yep.
Isn't it way more beneficial? So in your case, having the support with your peers in the animals, in the horses and dogs, just to give that mirror that reflects rather than fixes, because nothing fixes. It's just a mirror.
I love that you call that it's impolite to try to fix somebody. It is actually, like, it's detrimental, because then they're not taking that responsibility and they're not realizing their own capacity and empowering themselves to grow into what they are capable of being. Because we limit that if we are doing the work or trying to.
And still also realizing probably it's not everybody's game in this life.
Exactly.
Some people don't. So, and that's not your fault either.
Right.
Isn't that great?
Right. Yes.
And it's so easy to tap into gratitude if you come from that perspective.
As I was coming into the session with you, I was thinking about how grateful I am for the experience. Like, Chad's death was the hardest thing I've ever done, and it has been probably my most precious blessing. And you cannot see that. You can't see it when you're in it. But on the other side of it, it is remarkable.
It's
extraordinary. Yeah.
Extraordinary. I can say ditto. Yeah, I totally see that. So if there is one thing in these, what I call Phoenix frequencies, and I'm so happy you are my first guest on this whole journey, is there anything you would like to pass on to anyone who's listening? Golden nugget to pass on, or anything, what comes from your heart?
Well, first of all, thank you for trusting me and for the invitation to be here with you. I am so honored. So thank you very much. And I would say, anybody that is listening or going through something in this moment, let the hurricane come. Let it buckle you. Let it crumble you. Because there is always beauty on the other side. Always. Whether it's wisdom that you grow into, or it's a rainbow that you can see clearly. There is beauty every single time.
Thank you, Erin. Beautiful to share this journey together, and very important. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
To that, I can't wait to learn from you and your future guests. I really want to celebrate and honor it, and it is beautiful. So,
and I love
thank you for
to
what you're doing.
Continue with your curiosity, because one of the longevity building blocks is curiosity. So I take the curiosity along. And I think also, if we stay open for what we don't know, everything can unfold. And it helps if you've seen the dark places. It really helps.
Yeah, you know, it might be cliche, but you can't see the stars without the darkness.